Hello and welcome. Catholic Answers Live. Happy Advent to you. Blessed Advent. Joyful Advent. Whatever it takes, let's get you a good Advent. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and a great show today with Carlo and Trent. Carlo's second hour. We'll do a little bit about what are we doing with Carlo's second hour? Now I forgot all of a sudden. I was just setting my mind what we're doing with Trent. Which Catholic doctrine troubles you? Oh, I like that one. Yeah, if you got a Catholic doctrine that you have trouble with, second hour with Carlo. First hour, Trent Horn, apologist here at Catholic Answers, world famous from his podcast, Council of Trent, available at trenthornpodcast.com, and the writer of a whole bunch of books. And this hour, we'll do some pro-life stuff with Trent. Hi, Trent.
Howdy, Cy. I think Carlo, didn't he write a song about the topic of his show, something like Bridge Over Troubled Doctrine? I hear this Simon and Art guy stole it from him.
No, that was, yeah, no, Carlo and Garfunkel.
Yes. Bridge Over Troubled Doctrine.
All right, persuasive pro-life's the topic this hour. If you want some tips on being pro-life and helping people come to the pro-life position, or helping people solidify the pro-life position, or just helping advance the argument for the good of our civilization and for the good of all the little babies, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Trent is the author of a book. Among his books is Persuasive Pro-Life. So he's the guy to talk to if you got a show called Persuasive Pro-Life. 888-318-7884. People feeling pretty good about the pro-life movement these days, or feeling bad about it, because the people who are feeling bad about it, they seem to have been under the impression that it would never come to this. But I feel kind of good about I don't feel good about where we are as a country or a society or a civilization or a planet or anything, but I do feel like, I think we might be making a little bit of progress here.
Well, I think the pro-life movement has made substantial progress in the past 50 years. It may not feel that way.
Yeah.
But we have to look that abortion rates in the United States are at the lowest they have been. I think they're lower than the time before Roe versus Wade. Now, there's a multitude of factors there. It may not just be the efforts of the pro-life movement, but it is helping. I also think to understand substantial gains in the movement, sometimes just preventing worse things from happening is a gain.
Yep.
I think about how LGBT issues, think about the level of acceptance for LGBT, how much it has changed from the 1970s to today. Radical, pervasive change. And yet in our culture, support for and against abortion is still at a typical stalemate. 25% very for, 25% very against, 50% in the mushy middle. And I think pro-life advocates have helped in their advocacy to keep it that way, to keep it from being just a dominating part of our culture, to being something people are very ambivalent about. They don't even want to say the word abortion. But we have to continue on. And I'm hopeful for these new cases that have been brought to the Supreme Court that may provide an inroad to have more legislative victories. There have been legislative victories at the state level that have reduced abortions over time. This may be another way. They just have to pray and keep at it.
888-318-7884, the number. In your state of Texas, your adopted state of Texas.
I think they adopted me.
Oh, did they? That was so good of them. How good of the state of Texas?
I was just like a little child, little grown man child in a California orphanage.
You were
saying, please, Governor Newsom, can I have some more?
No.
Can I go outside some more? More? You want more?
So that was the governor of California. He treats you like that?
Oh, yes.
Horrible guy. So
then,
you went to Texas.
And then Governor Greg Warbox Abbott came and picked me up. And I sang, and I had my red curly hair and everything.
But for many people, Texas is the evilest state now because you have SB8 there. For other people, Texas is the hero state. How is it in Texas? Like, what are people saying about this law?
So SB8 allows people, private individuals, to sue others who are involved in facilitating abortion, primarily abortion providers. So because of that, a lot of abortion facilities here are not offering abortions. And the law has gone back and forth with whether injunctions to prevent it or allow it to continue. But I think that it has caused many abortions to not be performed. And so I think that's worthwhile, even if the law does eventually get struck down. It's gone to the Supreme Court, so we don't know what's going to happen there. But I think it demonstrates that you can restore legal protection to the unborn, and it does not create some kind of handmaiden's tale of dystopian nonsense. I just feel like, so that
handmaid's tale,
whatever, Margaret Atwood, is that her name?
No, yeah. Wait, I can't remember now. You're probably right. Yeah. Margaret Atwood.
I think it's Margaret Atwood. Yeah, yeah. The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
What's hard for me that a book like that would be taken seriously is that imagine if I wrote like a book about how like militant atheists got their hands on nuclear launch codes and disrupted the government and then took it over and rounded up religious people and put them into concentration camps. And the ones that they liked, they made them the slaves of reason and used strict utilitarianism to administer. Then this is what would happen if atheists were in charge. Like, you would think I was a nutcase if I said something like that.
Sam Harris would make fun of you if you did that. So would Richard Dawkins.
But that's basically the plot of The Handmaid's Tale. Is about a group of fundamentalist Christians who overthrow the United States government and then enslave. And a part of their fundamentalist creed, they have multiple wives, and some of their wives are really sexual slaves called handmaids. And so they do this debauchery, but then they also outlaw abortion.
Yeah,
and you see that when you look at protests at the Supreme Court. That's what the women dressed in red and like with the white hoods. That's what they are representing, is they think will happen if you have the audacity to restore legal protection for unborn children.
Yeah. But you know what they do? It's a funny thing, because you have this funny dynamic where if you talk about The Handmaid's Tale, they go, it's just fiction. Why are you so upset about it? It's just fiction. And then when the Supreme Court rules against them, or seems to be, then you have all these people dressed up in Handmaid's Tale. Is this fiction, or are you actually like, you're muddling your own message there.
So, I mean, that's why it's hard. That's why as pro-life advocates, we have to be very, very clear to always stay focused on what the unborn are, because people will try to say that opposition to abortion is misogyny, though they don't really say that too much anymore, because now they say that abortion is not for women, it's for birthing persons.
Yes.
And so when I gave a talk at a university in New Jersey a few weeks ago, some of the students protested my talk, and they went to the administration, and one of them said, we're protesting Trent Horn, not just for women, but for all the transgender men who are at risk of not having a right to an abortion because of people like him. And I'm like, this is very interesting. I would enjoy talking to you to see how this worldview makes sense. But no, I'm happy to talk to people today about the pro-life worldview, or if you're pro-choice and you want to explain why you're pro-choice, I'm happy to chat with you as well. We'll bump you up. So, happy to talk about how to do that.
888-318-7884, the number, 888-318-7884. I was just thinking about something, Trent, and then we'll go to the break, and then we'll come back and take all these calls. But that thing about a communist government, not a communist government, an atheist government that like starts murdering people and stuff, I forgot. That actually happened like a bunch of times. Right.
I could say, well, it did happen before.
No, because
it's not outside the realm of possibility.
I was talking with this atheist girl one time, and I said, well, the Soviet Union was an atheist country. She's like telling me about if atheists would take over the world. I was like, the Soviet Union was an atheist country. She said, no, it wasn't. I said, yes, it was. It was an officially atheist country. No, it wasn't. That's just things Christians say to. Okay. All right. Well, can't help you.
Well, and you know what's funny, actually, in my book, Can a Catholic Be a Socialist? I talk about the persecution that happened to Christians, especially to the Russian Orthodox Church in the Soviet Union. And they said that they felt like they were chickens in a hen house waiting to be plucked and taken to the slaughterhouse, essentially.
And many were taken to the slaughterhouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
More, yeah.
I learned the word in Russian just so that I would be able to say it the next time. It's gozatium. It means state atheism. That's what the Soviet Union policy was called, gozatism. Mary, I got to go to the break first. We'll be right back. We'll chat with, no, we're done chatting with Trent. You chat with Trent. We'll do that when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic. Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
How are you listening to EWTN Radio right now? Have you ever wished you could listen on a local radio station? Maybe our Lord is speaking to your heart to help make that happen. Don't let a lack of experience hold you back. Find out how you can help start a Catholic radio station where you live. Powered by the truth of the church and EWTN's dynamic radio programming. Email Steve at this address, radio@EWTN.com.
Trent Horn, he wrote the book Persuasive Pro-Life, and he's here to answer your questions, whether you are pro-life or not. Persuasive Pro-Life is our topic this hour, 888-318-7884. Before Kerry left the building this afternoon, he said, do my CASA ad. So I have to do that now. Please hold on, Trent. Please hold your comments until I'm done with the ad.
Of course, of course.
You're promising, because sometimes you do interrupt when I'm doing the ad. You're not? Oh, he's being quiet.
I will hold.
Me. Time is running out. What to do? Our recommendation for a guaranteed smile on Christmas morning, enroll your loved one in one of our School of Apologetics courses. Now, at our lowest prices of the year, today and tomorrow, over 50% off, $40 for full courses, just $20 for mini courses, including Trent's Arguing Against Abortion mini course. What are you waiting for? Get on over to shop.catholic.com right now and sign up. shop.catholic.com. Thank you, Trent, for letting me do it without interrupting. You were so peaceful and quiet while I did that.
Like a baby who is not screaming their head off.
Pick a number between 1 and 6, and I'll go to that line. Just say the number out loud, and I'll go to it.
Any 3.5.
No, come on. I mean, like a whole number. I don't have
you
a
didn't,
line
you didn't
3.5.
You didn't say it had to be a
J.K. Rowling.
3.1415.
And we're not doing pi.
You pick a number.
All right, I'm picking line 1. That's because I'm so creative. Is that okay with you if I go to line 1?
That is fine.
That's Tony in Coldwater, Michigan, listening on 91.5 FM. Tony, go ahead with your question for Trent.
Yes, sir. My question, I don't remember which one of you said it, was that the rate of abortion, probably not absolute numbers due to population, right, that the rate of abortion was less now than it was before 73 Roe versus Wade. I would be curious to know, because I've got a pro-abortion friend quotes me the same thing. Where do you come up with such a statistic? Do you mean a million women went and sought illegal abortions and then admitted to it in a questionnaire?
Oh, you're talking about... Right. So what I'm referencing are statistics that have been counted since like 1970 or 1973 for the Roe versus Wade decision. During that time, the early 70s, abortion was not illegal in every state. Abortion was legal in California, New York, in many other states. So
but
you could
people
calculate.
Didn't travel that far to and then admit to it to come up with numbers that you're trying to tell me there were more before than there are now?
Well, I'm just saying when I look at data, I'm looking at data from the Alan Guttmacher Institute. They were the former research arm of Planned Parenthood. Now they're an independent researcher. The two main organizations to get statistics on abortion rates would be the Alan Guttmacher Institute and then the Centers for Disease Control. But the CDC doesn't get data from every state. But so Guttmacher reports higher abortion numbers than the CDC as a result of that. But according to Guttmacher, I think it's saying now that like back in 1973, there were about 16.3 abortions per 1,000 women. Whereas nowadays, the abortion rate has declined. I think it might be around 14 or so. That was a few years ago. And so that's just the rate. That's not based on population. And there could be a wide variety of factors. Some of them might be pro-life laws that have regulated abortion, waiting periods, parental consent, laws like that. Other things that may have accounted is that sexual activity like teen pregnancy has declined. So unintended pregnancies have gone down as well. That could be caused by using contraceptive methods or just a decrease in sexual activity among certain populations. So there's a lot of different research on that. But in general, though, if you look, what happened is that you see in 1973, you know, you start measuring it, it shoots up into the early 80s. So you get really high, I think close to like 30 abortions per 1,000 women in the mid 80s. And then it starts to go, and then it starts going down after that. And you see that, then that was a big time when the pro-life movement really started to kick into high gear, Operation Rescue and all that stuff. So it's probably a wide variety of factors that led to abortion rates being decreased. But I'm grateful that they're going down. They're still still high, but it's good that they're going down. And we should just pray they should continue to go down and we can restore legal protection for the unborn. So thanks for calling in.
Thanks, Tony. The number is 888-318-7884. Persuasive Pro-Life this hour with Trent Horn. Your call's welcome. 888-318-7884. Going to Mary in Connecticut now, watching on YouTube. Mary, go ahead with your question for Trent.
Okay. My question is, how much do you think the problem with the disparity between the people in Catholics, especially the bishops, that believe that it's okay to use the cells of unborn babies in this vaccination or in the testing of this vaccination, and it's okay to take it, and how much has that affected the pro-life movement? I mean, yeah, we can have all these statistics, we can go to court, but how about the way we live our lives? You know, it's to me, and I don't think it's just a matter of that it's my opinion. I believe that the truth is that it is really not right in any case to take the life of an unborn children to protect somebody already living, for me to protect my life.
Yes.
I just don't understand that. I mean, I've read all the things that the NCBC, that's really the basis of what the bishops base their argument on, I'm pretty sure. But I'm pretty upset with it. I really, whether or not you agree with me or not, I hope you agree with me that people should start really talking about the reality of this vaccination. They should mention some of the bishops that disagree completely with the American bishops. And it should be out there. It's not on EWTN. This morning, somebody on EWTN counseled somebody that it was okay that she was against, she morally did not want to take it, but she should take it in order to so her children would not be upset with her or feel like they're not treated.
Well,
she's not treating
well,
them
well, Mary. Right. Well, Mary, people do have vaccines are a controversial issue for many people, especially vaccines that have connection to fetal cells that were taken from abortions that occurred in the past. And I agree with you. We shouldn't do something where we have to continually kill innocent people in order to generate medicine or things like that. But the church has said the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which is the highest teaching office in the church, has said that there is a proportional reason to use vaccines that were tested on cell lines that came from one of these fetal cells many decades ago. That would be what we call cooperation with evil. The problem is that anything we – so I guess your concern seems to be well, you're not comfortable being involved with something that could be involved with abortion somehow. I guess there's a difference between you being uncomfortable with it or saying that it's wrong in general for anybody to be involved with that.
Can I just, it sounded to me like Mary said something that we would absolutely agree with, which she said it's wrong to kill children so that other people can get a cure. And that is, she's absolutely right about that.
Right, absolutely. I firmly agree with that. But the other problem is that we have exist, and this is just what the church teaches. So I'm just going to say what the church has taught, and people can take what the church teaches or not. But the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has said that there is the cooperation with abortion in this case is about an abortion that happened in the past. Cell lines that exist now that are not the same fetal cells that were taken for abortion. These are cell lines that have been duplicated over time. They were used to test this particular vaccine to see if it's effective for use. Much the same way this pops up in other treatments. The treatment that President Trump took, for example, when he was diagnosed with COVID, Regeneron was tested in a similar way. There's other medicines that exist in this way. The MMR vaccine to prevent measles, mumps, rubella. The church has recognized it's moral to take MMR vaccines for quite a while. So people can choose. I do believe that they should not be mandated. The Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith has said that the vaccines, as a general rule, should not be mandated. People should have a freedom of conscience to speak against them. But the church has also said that it's not sinful to take these things. If it were sinful to take this vaccine because it exists because of the evil of abortion, then many, many things we do nowadays would be sinful. Driving on roads in the South would be sinful. Many of them were built by slaves. And although I'll tell you one thing, Si, one thing that I find very sad is some people tell me, well, yeah, but slavery is not as bad as abortion. Oy. Well, we can quibble about it, but it's a grave, monstrous evil.
Yeah,
and to downplay it. And I think in many cases, anywho.
Yeah. No.
My point is that, but in any case, like if you use your iPhone, the reason you have a cell phone is because child slaves in Africa mined the precious metals that go into this. Everything we do in one form or another is going to be connected to some kind of evil in this world. So the question is there a proportionate reason to have this kind of remote cooperation?
Yeah.
And so it's not just also doing something where, you know, an evil act in the past allows me to have this thing today, whether it's a vaccine or a cell phone. For example, is it evil to open a brewery? You might say, well, no, but I might say to you, some people are going to buy beer from there and they're going to get drunk. And they wouldn't have gotten drunk if your brewery hadn't been open. So it's like, you know, you're cooperating. Now it's remote material cooperation, so there's a proportionate reason to allow it. Just know if you're a bartender and you see a guy's drunk, you can't hand him another drink. That would be the cooperation is too close. But with vaccines that come from illicit medical experiments, the other examples I gave, this would be remote material cooperation. So I do sympathize and understand those who would make a moral witness against vaccines that are connected to abortion, and I think they should have the freedom to do that. But the church has been very clear, it is not sinful for Catholics to use the vaccines in order to combat the pandemic. Though I think Mary brought up one other point, and that would be that, well, if we just all showed a solid pro-life witness, people won't take us seriously if we don't show a pro-life witness. Well, that's a prudential argument, and I just don't find that to be very plausible. I can't get I would say the vast majority of Catholics would absolutely say it is wrong to dismember a baby in the second trimester of pregnancy.
Good Lord, yes.
Like, we're all uniformly, and we will vocally say at the top of our lungs that that's wrong, whether you're progressive, traditionalist Catholic, whoever. Guess what? I still can't get regular people to want to outlaw abortion in the second trimester of pregnancy. So it's like our moral stance, I don't think that even if we did have this stance, I don't think it would change very much. But I would find it difficult to find being able to organize people even around that. So I think it's a prudential argument that shouldn't really factor into the equation that much. But I do think, once again, my point, the CDF has said it's not sinful to take the vaccine. But the CDF has also said it shouldn't be mandated and people should be able to voice their conscience and conscientiously object to taking it.
Yeah, and we maybe haven't talked about that second part about it, that it's not moral to mandate that people take a medical treatment. It's not moral to do that. And so that's the other part of this. But Mary, I'm very grateful for the call. It's persuasive pro-life this hour. Maybe you got a pro-life question. Maybe there's some situation in which you are not sure how to address this, the whole pro-life issue. And the issue Mary brings up, It's related to, say, for example, an ectopic pregnancy. Well, how do we answer that? Because we know that there are these difficult and dangerous pregnancies. What do we do in those situations? Maybe you want to know about something about suicide or euthanasia or the treatment of the severely disabled, whether they have just become disabled or they're born disabled or any of that pro-life stuff. You want to talk about it? We got Trent Horn, the guy who wrote the book, Persuasive Pro-Life, right here with us to talk about it with you. Teresa in Oklahoma, don't worry. I see you're next and I'm coming to you. The number is 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Countdown to Christmas week. I just named it. I just named this week, Countdown to Christmas week. Came up with that myself. Oh, I think the Lifetime Movie Channel, I think I might have stolen that. Right back with Trent, Persuasive Pro-Life, right after this.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com. Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Did you ever try to sneak a peek at your Christmas gifts?
A lot of children do that.
We'll discuss it tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Trent Horn, our guest, Persuasive Pro-Life, this hour, every single line full now, so that's good. We'll work our way through that. Let's go to Teresa in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, listening on Oklahoma Catholic Radio. And you've been waiting a while, Teresa, but thank you for your patience. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
No problem. So I think I'm online with, I'm sorry to give you more grief about this, but with Mary, and probably as passionate about her question as well. But just in understanding, you know, how my parish can hold a vaccine drive, you know, like it just doesn't make any sense. It's one thing to be, you know, understand that, yes, different components come together that may not be, you know, 100% ethical, but it just doesn't make any sense that, you know, your local Catholic school will mandate that your child be vaccinated. And you know, whether it's measles that has used aborted fetal cells or this COVID vaccine, it just doesn't make sense to me that you can't get a religious exemption if you are knowledgeable, because I understand that not everybody knows
Teresa, it's I'm sorry. I just got to gather it up a little bit because it's quite a few different objections. I just want to get an objection that Trent can work on. Well, so are you talking about mandating? Go ahead.
Well, I heard two things in what Teresa said. I'll comment on both. One would be trying to understand, the inability to access a religious exemption. And I would say, because it's interesting, I very firmly believe that there are proportionate reasons to use the vaccines that have a connection to abortion in the past to deal with the harms caused by this pandemic. But on the other hand, I'm very committed to the view that people should be free to morally protest that, and that they don't necessarily they shouldn't need the idea that some Catholics have said there is no religious objection to this. Well, that doesn't make sense to me. For example, because some people say, the vaccine is an act of love and it's a good thing. Therefore, you couldn't possibly be opposed to that. Well, you could be opposed to elements related to why it's here, like the connection to abortion. I don't necessarily share that view that I could never be involved in it, but other people do. To make an analogy, consider military service. Generally, we would say military service is a good and honorable thing, and it's an act of courage to help one's country, especially if you're fighting you're fighting in a war that everybody agrees is a just war. Like, you're fighting to liberate people from concentration camps. There are some people who would root themselves in the Christian tradition and say, you know what, even though this is a just war, I cannot take the life of another human being. I cannot take the life of a human being, so I conscientiously object to being involved in anything in military where I might take or help someone take somebody's life. That would be a pacifist position. It's not the position the church endorses, like the church endorses just war is possible, but a Christian could take a pacifist position and decide they don't want to be involved in military things in any way, shape, or form. And they could argue that from a religious perspective, even though Catholicism doesn't hold to that, you have to be a pacifist. So I do think that I agree with you, Teresa, that a person, even if they don't have, they don't need a letter from their priest or their bishop, they could just cite principles in Catholic teaching and say, this is a witness for life that I want to make. On the other point, though, there is, you said, what about parishes that are hosting vaccine drives? That would be a question of a prudential judgment. Some parishes have chosen to not host vaccine stations or drives because, for a variety of reasons, one of them being that they don't want to be seen as being involved in the bioethic controversy over the vaccines. That's one position. Another position is that because the church allows the use of this vaccine and says that it can be an act of love towards others, it can be helpful for the common good, that they're justified in promoting that, hopefully while educating people about bioethics. So some bishops and priests will see nothing wrong with hosting vaccine clinics at a parish. Others will see it as a mixed message, and that's a prudential judgment that's up to them to decide. So I hope that's helpful for you, and I'm glad you called in.
And I'm going to keep moving, Teresa. Thank you very, very much. We just got lots of folks, and we've dealt with that one pretty well so far. I think let's go to an anonymous caller. Anonymous, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
Hello. I see you're talking to me.
Yes, that's you. Yeah.
So my wife, we had a miscarriage earlier this spring. We had a 5 or 6 year old week pregnancy that they had to take a tube out.
Oh.
My wife lost 3.5 pints of blood. She almost died. So we lost the baby, of course.
I'm sorry.
We tried to get the baby. Back from pathology, and they wouldn't let us have it for whatever reasons. But we just wondered, where's our baby now? Is she in limbo? Is she in heaven? What's the church saying on that? And we couldn't get the baby, of course. But I wonder if Catholic hospitals are there listening. It'd be great if we could have, if they could allow parents to get the babies, after ectopic pregnancies, if possible. Thank you.
No, I agree with you. And both Cy and I and our listeners, we're saddened to hear about your loss. My wife and I have endured miscarriages. I think many of our listeners probably have. And it's very tragic, and you want that sense of closure. And the question you ask is a very profound and sad one. Where is my baby? Because the Catechism does teach in paragraph 1257 that God has bound salvation to the sacrament of baptism, but it also notes in that same paragraph, God himself is not bound by the sacraments. So God has given us the ordinary means of salvation is through baptism, but the church has always recognized that it is possible for unbaptized people to go to heaven for different reasons. We understood that martyrs, even if they were not baptized, go to heaven. They have a baptism of blood. Catechumens who desire to be baptized and die before baptism have a baptism of desire. So there have been different proposals throughout church history to try to explain what happens to unbaptized children who die either before birth or after birth. One view that was held by theologians commonly through church history is limbo. This was a place that had natural happiness where children do not suffer because they have not sinned, but they do not enjoy supernatural happiness with God. Rather, they enjoy the natural happiness befitting God's mercy towards them. That's one view of limbo. And Catholics are permitted to hold limbo, but it's really been more theological speculation than it's not a defined doctrine or anything like that. However, there are other theological proposals that say that God is merciful, that the desire of parents to want to have baptized their children, if they could, can be a kind of baptism by desire, by proxy, and so that is sufficient for those children to attain grace to be able to enter into eternal life. There is a document that covers a great deal of this by the International Theological Commission called The Hope of Salvation for Infants Who Die Without Being Baptized. And so the conclusion is basically what happens to unbaptized babies? We do not have complete certainty because God did not reveal this to us. However, in the absence of that complete certainty, we can have a well-founded hope that Jesus, who said, "Let the children come to me," will welcome unbaptized children into heaven. It's not a certainty, but it's something we pray for and something we can have well-founded hope. So I hope that is helpful to you, and I would definitely recommend as you go through the grieving process to reach out to Catholic therapists or to other resources online. To help you. Then we'll ask our listeners to pray for you as well.
Okay, Anonymous.
Thank you. We had a rite of commendation for our parish. We really great it. We loved it. But if there's any Catholic hospitals listening, we really wish we could have the body back, or at least the tube back. But the pathology department wouldn't let us have it for some reason. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank
sure,
you.
Sure, that's no problem, Anonymous. And that's something to consult with hospital ethic boards. And maybe if you are pregnant and you have you may want to talk to your OBGYN to say, hey, if we do miscarry, what should we do? So in Anonymous's case, their miscarriage, the reason many people when they miscarry early, they do so at home. And so there are people who have developed devices to catch the products of miscarriage, but even then it can be somewhat difficult. So, people shouldn't beat themselves up over anything if they're unable to locate the body of their child, especially if it was early in a pregnancy. Anonymous, though, dealt with the case of an ectopic pregnancy. This is a result of surgery in a hospital, and that just might be hospital protocol because hospitals are bound by different federal and state regulations for the disposal of, I mean, it's crude to say, but medical waste. Of course, it's not just the baby. You have other tissue that is removed during surgery. And so that is something I think to consider, though, about the remains of children. To understand at a Catholic hospital, if your child died of SIDS or something, they would release the body back to you. It's a human being, not medical waste. And children should never be treated like medical waste.
Again, Anonymous, God bless you. Thank you very much. And so much good reason to hope for your child. We got to take a quick break, but let me say this before we take a break. You should subscribe to Trent's podcast, The Council of Trent. I got a list right here in front of me of perks for patrons of Trent's podcast. We can find it at trenthornpodcast.com. access to Trent's 18-hour catechism study series, access to audio versions of Trent's popular rebuttal series, access to Trent's 18-hour New Testament study series, a Council of Trent mug, which to me, come on, that's the top thing. That's the main thing. So much more stuff. You get all these benefits. Just visit TrentHornPodcast.com today and subscribe.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
One time somebody said to me, "Why don't you air these people?" And I said, "No, because I don't think they're Catholic." He says, "By what right do you have to say that?" I said, "I own the network."
Mother Angelica Live Classics, tomorrow night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Television and Radio.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back. Persuasive Pro-Life this hour with Trent. Phone's up and down today and a bunch of calls dropped. So if you want to get on the line, we'll probably get to you. 888-318-7884. I got questions about the proper treatment of life in any stage of development. 888-318-7884. Although I suppose at a certain point, it's not development anymore, huh? It's just like, I think I'm past development. I think I developed all, maybe I don't know. Trent?
Well, develop, I think it comes from a French word that means to unspool.
I'm definitely unspooling then. Okay. All right. Thanks. That's what I was worried about. I felt like I was unspooling, but I was calling it development.
So I guess it's like, it's hard because we sometimes think of growth as like you develop and like you reach your physical peak and then it's just all downhill from there. Well, growth is a process that continues through your whole life. And I'm sure, well, you do. Develop, you know, you don't grow new organs, but, you know, different things continue in the developmental process. The cartilage between the vertebrae and your spine shrinks, so you get to get shorter and shorter.
Yeah, and I'm developing worse eyesight. I'm developing gray hair.
The cartilage in your nose weakens, so your nose begins to droop as a sign of older age. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, we translate a Hebrew phrase, the Lord is slow to anger. In Hebrew, it's literally the Lord is long of nose. And that's a reference to the idea that the elderly members of the community were the ones who were the most patient and not brash. And so they were recognized for their patience and wisdom, and they're elderly, and they have the longer noses as a notation of that. So I don't know if you would agree.
What, that the elderly are patient and kind and beautiful and wonderful?
I feel like they're
nice. They're, I don't know, what else can I say about the elderly? They're old. They're not getting any younger. Is this positive or negative?
They get wisdom the only way you can. That's why they say youth is wasted on the young.
It feels that way a lot of the time.
I wish you could have had that wisdom earlier, but yeah.
Let's go to Adam in North Baltimore, Maryland, listening on 88.9 FM EWTN. Glad to have you, Adam. Go ahead with your question for Trent.
What is the subject of the day supposed to be? Because I heard something about abortion, so I called immediately.
Asking people what they think about abortion or if they have questions about pro-life. Or other pro-life issues. Okay. But yeah, if you have a question about abortion, we can talk about
it. Or old people.
I was only calling. I have a battle in my head, my own self. I have this feeling. I'm totally pro-life and born Catholic, cradle Catholic. But I really do feel like Jesus is pro-choice. And I realize this day and age, our culture, they're telling you pro-life or pro-abortion. But I do feel, for whatever reason, Jesus wants us to choose, and Jesus wants us to choose life by no doubt, but he wants us to have that choice. Does that make sense?
I think I understand the position you are articulating, but I do not think that position makes sense. When you say Jesus wants us to have a choice, by choice do you mean Jesus wants us to live in a world where it is legal to kill a human being before they're born? I don't understand why Jesus would want something like that.
I guess I don't either, but I just,
right,
in my heart of hearts, I just feel like Jesus wants us to choose life.
Sure.
Like, he wants us to have that choice. So,
right, but let me ask you this, Adam. Does making something illegal take away our choice to do it?
I guess no, because people definitely do horrible things even if they are illegal.
Correct. So we still have the choice to. I think you're right that Jesus wants us to have free will, and he gave us free will. Jesus gave us the ability to choose good or evil, to choose to be in union with him or to rebel against him. So Jesus, we have choices. And whether something is legal or illegal, people have a choice. There are many legal things. It's legal to volunteer at a soup kitchen. Many people don't choose to do it, you know. So the law is a bit different here. But I would say that Jesus, the same Jesus who said, "Let the children come to me," who is outraged at the poor and the marginalized being mistreated, Jesus would want every human being to be protected under the law so they're not unjustly killed. If we live in a world where it's okay to kill babies because they're unwanted, anything could be legal if you're willing to justify that. So I would say Jesus gives us free will, but he desires that we live in a world where even if people choose different things, the law protects every human being, that we ought to. And there might be people who disagree with us about that, and that's just too bad. They're wrong. And we should work peacefully and graciously to protect human beings from being harmed so that they can all grow up to come to know Jesus is Lord. So that might be the way that I would look at it.
Go ahead, Adam.
Okay, so it should be, as a law, and I agree with that, right? I agree that as a law, we should not be allowed to kill unborn fetuses. But you're saying as an overall, it's okay for me to hold the view that Jesus wants us to have a choice, but that is not the choice that we need to even put.
Adam, it is fine for you to hold the view. Let me make sure I get this very crystal clear. To believe that God gave us free will so that when we choose to walk an elderly person across the street, when we choose to obtain an abortion, when we choose to donate to charity, we choose to drive drunk, God gave us free will so that when we make choices, we will be held accountable. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 2, verses 5 through 8. He talks about how glory, honor, and immortality are for those who persevere, who choose to do right, and that God's wrath is waiting for those who choose to rebel against God and choose gravely evil things. So it's not just okay. You should believe God gave us free will and that God will hold us accountable for what we choose to do with our free will, whether it's choosing to obtain abortion or choosing to just not care or not do anything in the face of unborn children being killed or things like that. Or, you know, so we have free will. We can choose, but we will be held accountable for our choices, especially our choices related to the most vulnerable members of society. So I hope that is very helpful for you. If you stay on the line, Adam, I would like to send you a copy of my booklet, 20 Answers Abortion, and we could email a copy of that to you. And I hope that would benefit you very much.
Adam, do hang on. I'll put you on hold, and then Sarah will talk with you. But I also want to make a recommendation, because just recently we did an episode of our podcast here at Catholic Answers in the radio department. We have a podcast as well, and it's called Catholic Answers Focus. And we drill down on a topic with somebody who's able to drill down on that topic with us. We talked with Monica Dumit, who is the policy director for the Archdiocese of Sydney in Australia, and one of the great pro-life voices in the world. But we challenged her with this. We said, tell us some stuff that the pro-choice people get right. And so we ended up with a interview called Five Things Pro-Choice People Get Right. And among them is this discussion of choice. I think you'll enjoy it, Adam. You just go to CatholicAnswersFocus.com. CatholicAnswersFocus.com. Now just hang on for a quick sec, and Sarah will get your address in North Baltimore and send that book out to you, 20 Answers Abortion. I just want to let folks know, too, while we're on it, 20 Answers Abortion in its e-version and its electronic version is actually free right now. And you can get that over at shop.catholic.com. Did you know that, Trent?
I did not know that. That's an excellent resource for people.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's because I think they chose that because we got all this Roe v. Wade stuff going on, and you know, you're just hearing all the old arguments starting up again, and right. so many things that we thought, well, that's been debunked a long time ago. No, it's back again, and they're abusing the young with it and the vulnerable, and so we thought we'll give this free. So Catholic Answers booklet that Trent wrote, 20 Answers Abortion, free as an electronic book at shop.catholic.com.
All right.
And now I'm going to ask you questions because I don't know what's going on with the phone, so I'm going to talk pro-life with you.
Go right ahead.
I don't know if you saw this, but the state of California now, the politicians here, is talking about being a sanctuary state for women seeking abortion. And they're going to use, I don't know, the idea is state money and bring women across the border.
They're probably making up for the fact that I think in the past year, the number of people who want to move to California has dropped by like 30%. So they want somebody to show up.
Yeah, but
people don't want to live there.
I don't know. I don't know if you stay or if it's just a temporary thing. But if two people come, only one goes home in this scenario. And it's right. Awful. It's just awful to think that.
Yeah, it's typical posturing, and in a state that claims to care so much about the weak and defenseless, while having the highest homeless population, the greatest income inequality, in any place in the U.S. It's interesting to try to score points with the blue check crowd on Twitter to say things like that, rather than providing people with actual, you know, it reminds me of the other thing that California did when they tried to mandate that pregnancy resource centers advertise for abortion services.
Yeah, right.
That it's not good enough. Like you always tried, oh, pro-lifers don't do enough to help born people. And actually they do. And when you have pregnancy centers that do sacrifice to provide medical care and provide aid to women and men, you know, the families with unintended pregnancies, oh, that's not good enough. You also have to be involved in abortion too. So it's not just that, you know, you're imposing on our thing. At one time it was pro-lifers, you're imposing your views on everyone. But now in many places it's no. We're going to impose our pro-choice, our pro-LGBT views on you.
Right.
We went from tolerance in the 90s to celebrate diversity or else. But yeah, that's why there's some places where it's very difficult. Whereas here in Texas, there's a bunch of cities that have declared themselves abortion-free zones, that they will not allow abortion centers to be constructed there. I knew places here where abortion facilities tried to start up, and all the local contractors got together and said, we're not going to build it. We're just not going to. Good luck.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and so that's why it's not just laws. It's people willing to take a stand in whatever forum they are in life to be able to do that, to make a stand for life.
Well, Trent Horn, I don't think we're going to see you again between now and Christmas Day. So let me wish you. I hope you and your family, I hope the boys have a wonderful Christmas morning. Have a very happy, Merry Christmas, Trent.
I wish you a Merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart. Sigh. Merry Christmas to you.
That sounded so musical the way you said it.
From the bottom of my heart.
Feliz Navidad. Come on, sing it. Feliz. We're going out.
Feliz Navidad.
Okay, Carlo Broussard coming up. We're going to do... What bugs you about, or what Catholic doctrine? Is there a Catholic doctrine that you're just having trouble accepting, don't accept, don't like, want to rail against, or would like an explanation of? Carlo will be here to do all of that right after this. The number, 888-318-7884.